Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 6, Text 33. My dear son, whatever you inquired from me, I have thus explained unto you, and you must know for certain that whatever there is, either as cause or as effect, both in the material and spiritual world, is dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'd like to repeat that. My dear son,
whatever you inquired
from
me,
I have thus explained unto you,
and
you must know for certain
that
whatever there is, either as cause or as effect,
both
in the material and spiritual world,
is
dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The complete cosmic situation, both in the material and the spiritual manifestations of the energies of the Lord, is working and moving first as the cause and then as the effect. But the original cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Effects of the original cause become the causes of other effects, and thus everything, either permanent or temporary, is working as cause and effect. And because the Lord is the primeval cause of all persons and all energies, he is called the cause of all causes, as confirmed in Brahma Samhita, as well as in Bhagavad Gita. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Nadi Radhya Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. That one verse, if you just can keep that in mind, and in any situation, we should be able to start to, you know, be like Krishna says in the 12th chapter, equal, and whatever happens, it's Krishna, good or bad. It seems good or bad, but it's whatever situation we come across, whatever is happening in the world, Krishna is a supreme controller of it. Of course, the desires are, we're getting what we deserve, or we're getting tested, just like the students. You have to take examinations, right? It's not that you just pay money and then you graduate, right? You have to take the exam and you have to pass the exam. So, and the higher you want to go, the more difficult the exams become. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says, "Ham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate hiti matva bhajanti mam buddha bhava samambita." So the original primal cause is vigraha. Personal and the impersonal spiritual effulgence of Brahman's yogi is also an effect of the Supreme Brahman, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, 14:27. Brahmanohi Pratishtaham, Amritasya Vayasya Cha, Shasvatasya Cha Dharmasya, Sukhasyoikantikasya Cha. And this is another very important one. All Bhagavad Gita verses are very important, but depending on our realization, they're all absolute, but some are like very clearly easy for anyone to point out certain aspects of philosophy. I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. Because of my bodies, which includes, I don't know, all Buddhists, but one Buddhist I heard, he said, you know, at the time of death, you'll see this effulgence, and you have to focus your mind totally on this light and then become totally absorbed in it and enter into it. And I don't know if they all say that. That was at a meeting one man had in Japan, and it was supposed to be, the topic was reincarnation and karma. So he had a lot of Buddhist speakers, and they all completely different. Some said some souls reincarnate, some souls don't reincarnate. They said all kinds of different things. There was no, like, because that's speculation. Everybody just makes up something. Like the spiritual fair, there's so many groups that have their something that's going to make everything fine, you know, right? that the impersonal Brahman, which the, at least the Mayavadis are trying, you know, they see that if they become very purified and austere. And it's just so wonderful and amazing. I can't imagine if there's anything beyond it. But we have an Ishopanishad here, Ranmayena Patrena Satyasya Pita Makam. Please remove that effulgence so I can see you. It's like the sun. Oh, we can't see the sun. We can just see the light of the sun. Maybe some demigod or something, they can actually see the sun planet and everything that's going on there. But for us, we're blinded by it. What to speak of the Brahman Jyoti? That purport is in the Bhagavad Gita also, a long one. Brahmanohi pratishtaham. But Krishna is the basis of that. It's his effulgence. Like when he and Balaram were taking yogurt or butter from the dark caves kind of that the gopis were keeping it in, they said that their jewelry is glowing and it's lighting up and they can find their way inside the dark place. So Mother Yasoda said, okay, I'll take away all their jewelry. And then they said, no, actually it's their bodies are effulgent. So they don't need light, they don't need a flashlight or anything. And that's what it says. And normally if we put on jewelry, it's to try to beautify us, you know, to distract people from looking at our body and look at the beautiful jewelry or the beautiful clothes we have or something. But when Krishna puts on jewelry, it makes the jewelry look more beautiful, makes the jewelry look more beautiful, you know, next to his body. Jewelry doesn't look like much. He said if you put a pearl next to Lord Nityananda's or Lord Chaitanya's tooth, a white pearl, the pearl would look great compared to the white tooth of the Lord. So the constitution of Brahman is immortality, imperishability, eternity, and happiness. It is the beginning of transcendental realization. See, many people think it's the end. Paramatma, the super soul, is the middle and the second stage in transcendental realization, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate realization. Brahman Paramatma Bhagavan Iti Sabdate. Three different ways to realize the Absolute, depending on how far away you are. The example, probably like a mountain. If you're looking at a mountain very far, you don't see, you just see a big bump. Then if you get closer, you can see it's more the shape of it. And if you get, you can see the trees maybe. And when you get on the mountain, then you can see so many things. And he gave example of the train coming to India village the first time. So everybody was waiting to see what is the train. You know, the British had put the tracks. So men were waiting, and one man, he saw in a very long ways away this smoke. And he thought, ah, that's a big smoke. You know, that's what a train is. So he ran off to tell everybody. Then the next one saw it, you know, much closer and saw it was a big machine and made all kinds of noise, and you know, and he ran to tell everybody. And then the last one waited till it stopped, and he got on and looked around and saw the dining car and the seats and the sleeping bits and people. And therefore, Paramatman, the impersonal Brahman, are within the Supreme Person, is explained in the seventh chapter that material nature is a manifestation of the inferior energy of the Lord. The Lord impregnates the inferior material energy, Bhumirapo and Lovayu, with fragments of the superior nature. And it is a spiritual touch in the material nature. When the living entity conditioned by this material nature begins the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, he elevates himself from the position of material existence and gradually rises up to the Brahman conception of the Supreme. This attainment of the Brahman conception of life is the first stage of self-realization. At this stage, the Brahman-realized person is transcendental to the material position, but he is not actually perfect in Brahman realization. If he wants, he can continue to stay in the Brahman position and gradually rise up to the Paramatma realization, and then to the realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many examples of this in the Vedic literature. The four Kumaras were situated first in the impersonal Brahman conception of life. but then they gradually rose to the platform of devotional service. One who cannot elevate himself beyond the impersonal conception of Brahman runs the risk of falling down. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is stated that although a person may rise to the stage of impersonal Brahman, without any information the Supreme Person, his intelligence is not perfectly clear. So in spite of being on the Brahman platform, there is a chance of falling down if one is not engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. In the Vedic language it is also said, Raso vai sa rasam yevayam, labda vanandi bhavanti. When one understands the personality of Godhead, the reservoir of pleasure, Krishna, he actually becomes transcendentally blissful. Taittiriya Upanishad. Supreme Lord is full in six opulences, and when a devotee approaches him, there is an exchange of these six opulences. The servant of the king enjoys on an almost equal level with the king. So eternal happiness, imperishable happiness, and eternal life accompany devotional service. Therefore, realization of Brahman, or eternity, or imperishability, is included in the devotional service. There is already possessed by a person who is engaged in devotional service. The living entity, although Brahman by nature, has a desire to lord it over the material nature, and due to this he falls down. In his constitutional position, a living entity is above the three modes of material nature, but association with the material energies entangles him in different modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Due to the association of the three modes, his desire to dominate the material world is there. By engagement in the devotional service and full Krishna consciousness, he's immediately situated in a transcendental position, and his unlawful desire to control material nature is removed. Therefore, the process of devotional service, beginning with hearing, chanting, remembering the prescribed nine methods, gradually by such association and influence of the spiritual master, one's material desires to dominate is removed, and one becomes firmly situated in the Lord's transcendental loving service. This method is prescribed from the 22nd to the last verse of this chapter. Devotional service is very simple. One should always engage, should eat the remnants of food offered to the deity, smell the flowers offered to the lotus feet, see the places where the Lord had his transcendental pastimes, read the different activities of the Lord, his reciprocation of love with his devotees, chant always the transcendental Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. By following this, one becomes completely detached from all material activities. One who can thus situate himself in the Brahma Jyoti or different varieties is equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in quality. Namo Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane, Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pracharane, Nirvisesha Shunyavadi, Paschachade Satanane. This desire to control and lord it over, it's known and it's exploited by businesses, right? In Nigeria, there's one telephone, you know, like here we have 123 and True, they have one called Glow. So their advertisement is rule your world. And they have big billboards all over with different kinds of people, young people, rock and roll musicians, businessmen, you know, rule your world. If you have, supposedly if you have this, you can control everything. So it must work because they've been using it for years. Rule your world. You can enjoy. You can be happy. You can be the controller. You know, get this car and you can drive, you know. One BMW, well, they have it here. It says Joy is BMW or something. Yeah. And they had one on the LA highway, which gets so crowded in the evening. It's just a complete standstill. It said own the highway. You know, like if you have that car, everybody gets out of your way or something. But not true. It may be more comfortable inside and you have a better stereo and better air conditioning or something, but you can't move. So this cause and effect, you can't separate really cause from effect. In every cause there's an effect, and in every effect there's a cause. For every action there's a reaction. But the ultimate cause, the cause of all causes, is Krishna. Like if a plane crashes and they do so much investigation to try to find out what caused it, right? Or sometimes some disease is spreading, so they have to find, you know, where it's coming from. And they find out that some, you know, meat factory they weren't watching very closely, so they got so much infection and so many people get sick. At least in America. Here they wouldn't say anything. One time in America, people got sick, they thought, from eating spinach. So for a while they stopped. Nobody would sell spinach in the shops. They just condemned spinach, you know. They never do that if it's meat. They just stop meat from one particular day in one particular factory. Then they found out that the spinach that the sickness came from, because the pigs had got in the spinach patch and then the pig stool was mixed in or something. That's why they... But they want to, you know, make a big ad how the vegetables are bad. You better eat meat, all right. But very often it's meat. One time it was eggs. And they... You know, they have half a billion eggs or something they threw away. And that sounds like, right? But then I calculated how many eggs every day in America. And it's so many billion. So the half a billion in one day, it's nothing. The cause ultimately is Krishna. And they don't even generally get to the cause of just the, you know, the bad karma. They're getting some understanding about every once in a while in the news or something, when there's a flood or something, or, you know, or like the mad cow disease. One article said, it seems like every time we try to go against the basic laws of nature, then we get in trouble, you know, because they're feeding the cows the cow meat and it produced all these problems. So they get some understanding, but they don't want to really get into it. They just want to scientifically say, okay, now we know, and we won't sell that part of the cow anymore, and we won't, you know, we won't do this or that, but they don't want to get down to the karmic reaction because of the people's sinful activities. It's really what's causing all that. Yeah. What?
Is that one person? Prabhupada comes to the center, separate, and he says he's vegetarian, and he's been vegetarian for a while, and he doesn't kill anything, but he eats eggs, and he says, well, egg is not killing anything because the rooster did not impregnate. They just take the egg, so why is egg?
Yeah.
So I kinda really,
they were asking Prabhupada about that. And Prabhupada was, you know, like he sometimes they would think he didn't understand exactly the question. Then he said, it's not because the egg is killing that we don't eat it. He said, egg is abominable. Oh, she has to go to school today?
No, I have interview for my internship.
Oh, yeah? All right.
So they call me.
So, and also, of all the terrible ways they treat animals to get food from them, the egg factory is like the worst. Right? So you can tell that to people. I mean, there's movies about it, there's all kinds of things. It's not that those chickens are just, now they say, well, it's a free-range chicken, and it's just happily, but mostly there's none of those. Maybe in America there's a few like that, or England or something. But the egg factory is the worst place. The first place, any male chicken that's born in the egg factory, they just kill it right away. And then the other ones, when they, you know, when they can't lay so many eggs anymore, then they just let them starve to death or something. It's a horrible thing. So you don't really, shouldn't want to support that. But the egg is, it's abominable. If it's fertilized, then you can say it's a, you know, it's a chicken that didn't develop. And if it's not fertilized, then it's like a menstruation of a chicken. So it's not a very nice thing. Horrible. But somehow people are just, you know, now thinking egg is so important, such important good food. Because they can produce so many, many eggs. And, right? You see these trucks just full of eggs. That's not natural. They're just a few chickens walking around in somebody's yard. They don't lay that many eggs, you know. And that's the argument. It's not killing. They'll say, well, and then the Buddhists often say this, and other people that, well, you're killing when, you know, when you dig up a carrot or something, so there's no difference. But there's a difference. If you said, okay, then what if I wanted to kill you and eat you? It's no different than killing an animal, right? Killing a human, or kill your dog, in America anyway. You know, you can be put in prison for killing a dog. And the people that put you in the prison eat all kinds of meat every day. You know, but they
any
like
dog means a dog owned by a person.
You know, it wouldn't happen to just kill any dog, but it is a crime. They arrest people for, you know, not for mistreating dogs. And, but for cows, they don't think.
That's a Rukma Prabhu has that T-shirt, right? I love my cow. Go eat your dog or something.
He's got a T-shirt. Yeah, but they Americans will say, well, the cow is meant for eating, but the dog is our good friend. And the Filipinos, when they try to tell them they shouldn't kill dogs, they say, well, you're killing cows, why can't we kill dogs? And the Japanese, the whales, they say, well, you're killing cows, why can't we kill whales? Why do Americans come all over the ocean try to stop them from killing whales? But when you say, why do you kill cows? They say, well, no, that's okay, there's so many cows anyway, and God gave us the cows for eating. So they don't have any proper morality, you know. They don't have any ethics that are based on any intelligence. The same doctor that will, you know, save a premature baby that's born this big and do operations on it in the womb will do an abortion, depending what the parents want. They just do their work, you know. They don't understand anything. So anyway, this is like the end of, I guess, of Brahma is telling Narada, I've explained, I've answered all your questions now. So now you should understand that everything depends on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's, you know, what we're trying to understand. So that's what I was saying, that verse, Ishvara Parama Krishna. You know, if we can keep that in mind, or that verse, Yasyana Nugrahami, Krishna told Yudhisthira, when I really favor someone, I take away everything. Well, Prabhupada, you know, he tells his life story, at least for me, I don't think it, you know, it's really like just karma or something, like he tries to make it sound, but it's Leela. But, you know, he was coming up quite a bit in business, looked like he was going to get, he was even predicted he'd become very, very rich. And Prabhupada, at one time he said he was too puffed up, you know, he was offered some big, big job, but he said, I was too proud and I didn't take it. But then things went wrong. People were not paying their, you know, their orders, and somebody else in the company was talking bad about him to the boss. And the Prabhupada said Krishna dismantled everything. And he says how he kept remembering that verse, that when I especially favor someone, I take away everything. And then his wife even sold the Bhagavatam to buy some biscuits or something, or some tea. And then he got Prabhupada to ask her, what do you want, tea or me? She said, I want tea. He said, okay, and he left. He tried, you know, he tried to help engage the family in the preaching. He tried to He even set up businesses for the sons, but they didn't really want to work. And he tried to get the daughter married. She didn't accept anybody he came up with. And so, you know, he was 55 years old or something. But Krishna dismantled everything. He saw it always as Krishna. And when he was very successful in America, he said, I didn't do anything. I just wanted something, and Krishna sent people to make a Bhakta Godhead, and people, Krishna sent people to go out and chant. And, you know, he said Krishna did everything. He never thought, yes, I am great. I gave up everything, and now look at how wonderful I am. And he never blamed Krishna when things were apparently not going good. He just kept going. You know, in India, he got a few books published, but that was all, you know, he had to work so hard to do that. He had one disciple. You know, people liked him, people would favor him, give him a little bit donations, but it didn't look like, you know, any big success. And even 1 year in America was nothing practically. But he never lamented about it. He was happy that he was doing the order of his spiritual master. That's how we're supposed to be. Krishna is in control. But that doesn't mean we sit back and think, well, you know, I haven't done anything because Krishna doesn't want me to. Or so. The mind can think like that. Well, Krishna didn't want me to distribute any books. Krishna didn't want me to be successful. Maybe that's true, but still we should try. Sometimes, you know, Krishna will, no matter how hard we try, there won't be what looks like success. Money or scores or followers or something. But the success is that we try to carry on no matter what. And then if one is really successful, then the danger is to become puffed up about it. That Bhaktivinod said even someone can be a qualified spiritual master, but if he's exclusively with his followers who just keep telling him you're none different than God and you know everything he says, and then he become very proud sometimes and fall down. We've all fallen down from the spiritual world, so it shouldn't be a shock that someone can fall down from joining Hare Krishna. Someone asked about that, you know, falling from the spiritual world the other day. Prabhupada said one time, just like people join our movement, but then they leave. So, to him, that was how could they leave? They got such a nice life, you know. But they're thinking, I can't enjoy here. Can't eat meat, or I can't have sex, or I can't, you know, this and that. I've got to get out. Or sometimes they're just thinking, all these other devotees are not good devotees, you know. I can't stay around them. They're no good. I'm leaving. But Prabhupada said, actually, Krishna is kicking them out. But they go away thinking, well, because I'm such a great devotee, that I can't live with these people. You know, they're all neophytes. But that's the Mahakanishta. Yeah, in every, you know, there's different levels, right? I was looking for one thing that Urmila Dev wrote, a really nice poem she wrote called Love Is Not a Formula. You read that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, then it's really good. Because people ask like that, how do you do this? You know, how can you, what, like it's some bang, 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 but it's not like that. You know, the surrender to Krishna is not, some people say, how long will it take, you know, to become this or that, or to get to this point? How did you get there? It's not exactly like that. There's basic things we have to do, but then it depends on, and then Prabhupada said in that purport about Nalakavar and Manigriva, they were in the Ganga, but they weren't getting purified. You know, millions of people go to the Ganga and get purified, but not everyone that goes in the Ganga gets purified. They were into our sinful activities. So he said, everything, material or spiritual, depends on your mental attitude. Not only what you're doing, you know, but your attitude, how you're, you know, that's what makes the big difference. So that's explained many times, that two devotees can be doing all the same things. Even one can appear to be doing it much better, you know, always up early, always chanting, you know, always distributing the most books or something, and then all of a sudden they're gone. And the other one, you know, keeps going. So because of offensive attitude that, you know, maybe they're keeping in their mind. And Bhaktisiddhanta compared that to worms. Like if you have worms in your stomach, then you can eat the best food in the world and just keep losing weight and getting weaker and weaker and weaker because the worms eat everything. They take all the nutrition out. They don't take the bulk of it. That you're stuck with. You have to process that through your body, but no nutrition comes. The worms take it all. So it's like that. If we have an offensive attitude, and especially Vaishnava aparad, then whatever we do, it just gets devoured. The benefit of it is devoured. You can do the activities, but whatever benefit should be there. And someone else might not be doing so much. You know, they might not have so much abilities or something, but they have a really good attitude, humble attitude. They can make so much advancement. So that's the cause. The ultimate cause is Krishna, Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarva Karana Karanam. You see this cartoon? Is it, you know, some Bible person with a big knife, and there's a sheep, and he's going to kill the sheep, you know, for the yajna. The sheep says, wait a minute, you know, it specifically says here, thou shalt not kill. And that, to me, that doesn't leave any room for interpretation. He's holding up the Ten Commandments. Because they came up with that thing, you know, it means murder. And murder only means humans. But that's not what the dictionaries are. I don't know where they get that. But you ever look in the dictionary?
And it doesn't say murder in the Bible. You know, thou shalt not murder either.
Well, we don't know what it says, actually, because there's so much controversy. What's the original language and who wrote it? But it's always been translated, thou shalt not kill, like forever. But murder, according to the dictionary, is unlawful premeditated killing of a human being, it says here. But then another one, the verb is kill intentionally and with premeditation. So the animal slaughter is very premeditated, very organized. But this dictionary, somehow they said human being in the one definition, but that's not always what it says either. But anyway, they try to speculate. That's a speculation. And they just keep twisting everything around.
So the author of that dictionary is a man-eater, so you have to say it like that.
Yeah, he's a Christian.
I think the Buddhists also, they say that ahimsa, right, Mayas, but they say that, you know, okay, we should not kill, they agree that, but then they say, you know, but somebody else kills, it's okay.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I just read an interview with the Yeah, one definition is to kill or slaughter inhumanly or barbarously. That's pretty much what the animal killing is. Yeah, there was an interview with the Dalai Lama. So they're asking him if he's a vegetarian. He said, he was for a while, then he got sick, and you know, then somebody told him he should eat meat, so he started. Now he says he eats meat twice a week or something. And then he said, I discussed it with one Buddhist, and he said that if it's specifically killed for you, then it's, you shouldn't eat it. But if it was just killed by someone else and they offer you meat, then that's okay. Because they're bhiksha, you know, they have to take whatever they get. Which is the rule for a bhiksha, you know, they're supposed to go. But I think in the Vedic, it's something like the Madhukari, they only go to like 7 houses. And then they take, if they get nothing, they don't eat that day. If they get a feast, they eat it. But they don't take abominable things, you know. But like here, if the monks, you know, if they put an ad out and on TV and they said, please, we don't want meat, nobody would give them meat. Right? They give them meat because that's what they want. So, but many, at least, they don't eat beef, I guess. So. So they do, you know, generally maybe murder it, but killing is killing. Animals have souls. You know, people bond with the animals, like so many different kinds of horses and dogs, especially in America. And they really protest if somebody is killing a horse and killing a dog. Like America, they have people don't eat horse meat. They used to use it for dog food, but in France especially, they really like horse meat. So they export, so that, you know, the animal people, they made a law, they can't export horses to get, you know, killed. But they export so many cows. The horse is our friend, it's to work, but the original American working animal was a bullock. The bullocks. But nobody knows that. Because all the movies, like when I was a kid, they showed the old settlement of America, it was always horses. Because by the time they made those movies, there was no bullocks trained.
You stood in your passport also, right, man? Yeah. They had the ox.
Yeah, that's interesting. In the American passport, every picture, every page has a picture of some American history. So they show the bullocks working in the field. But we never heard of that. I never heard of it. Only horses. You know, and now there are a lot of farmers that work with horses, but not with bulls very much.
See, at the farming, like the horticulture fair, farm animal fair, like horses and cows and things, humongous oxen, just so powerful.
They have them working?
No, they just try to win awards.
Yeah. There are, I think, now a few people that work with them.
Yeah, I think maybe like for some showcase thing they might...
Oh, a few farmers, but basically like when our devotees went around and they had bullock cart or something, people never, they never seen a cow before, most people. You know, not even in the movies, they don't have them anymore.
No, they just but for a prize.
Yeah, they still pretty much convinced that that's the Christians, you know, God just gave it especially for eating.
But I mean, they're still...
They know that the cow is special for human beings, but they don't. And, but then they love milk also. They love ice cream. They love all that stuff. But then they'll kill the same cow. So, and some people keep chickens for pets and they love their chickens. But mostly, they don't know where it's coming from. You know, like myself, I ate so much meat, and one of my neighbors, he was hunting deer, right, in Minnesota, and I had seen the dead deers, you know, when the hunters are coming back. You know, I just couldn't stand it to even look at them. And I would never think of eating that meat. But the meat from the supermarket, I never connected, you know, where it was coming from. Until I stopped eating it for some reason, and after a short time, you start to think straight and understand. So we have a lot to, we have to give everything to Krishna. But Ishvar Parama Krishna, and that's so many slokas, so many places, that same idea is given. But that one is like the easiest one to memorize. Very simple, right? Ishvar Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vig. Everything is there in that one verse. Krishna is the supreme controller. He is eternal, blissful, knowledgeable, and has form. And an Adir Adir Go. He is the beginning, but he has no beginning, but he is the beginning. And he's the cause of all causes. Everything is there. So if you can't remember very good, just remember that one thing, and then anytime anybody, you know, is acting in a way you don't like, you know, chant that a few times. Because it, you can't help it. If we're in the material world, there's just no way we can avoid, you know, conflict and, you know, unpleasant relationships. And then those things change anyway sometimes. Right? That's why Prabhupada stressed we have to work as a society, you know, and cooperate. The last of his life, he said that, you know, your love for me will be tested by how much you cooperate with each other. And so many times, that, you know, service to the spiritual masters, to serve the disciples, and also, and one big Christian preacher in America that's very popular and quite strong, he says, you have to work with the church, he said, because in order to get love for God, you have to tolerate and be patient. And if you're all by yourself somewhere, you can never learn patience and tolerance. But in trying to work in a group of people, you have to, you know, because so many people don't agree with you. And sometimes nobody agrees with each other in a group, you know. But if we can all be patient and tolerant, then we can come to, you know, put together everybody's ideas, a little bit of each one, and come up with a lot of good things, right? But if everybody just says, I'm not going to work with these people, you know, forget it, then nothing ever happens. So it's not easy, but we have to, you know, develop compassion, patience, tolerance. Without those things, you can't make spiritual advancement. So most yogis and monks, they like to go off by themselves somewhere. Then they have to tolerate heat and cold and insects and snake bites and, you know, wild animals, and but not other people. It's easier to tolerate the, you know, hot and cold, easier to tolerate the winters and summers, hot summers and cold winters, and all, and not having good food and something than putting up with so many people. But if we do it, it's pleasing to the Guru, pleasing to Krishna, and we make a lot of advancement. All right?
Yes.
So if you haven't read that poem, or if you have, that love is not a formula, it's quite really relevant to modern, to our movement, you know, because talking about love, but love for anybody, but it, you can't just say, well, you do this and this and that, and then you're going to love Krishna. There's much more to it, you know. But it's, if we keep hearing about Krishna from the proper source and we have keep chanting Hare Krishna, then, you know, the love is already there. It will come out. But and we have to hear about people that really love Krishna. That's why we have stories of all the acharyas. They really love Krishna. And you can see, well, you know, flooding tears, or the clothes are soaking wet. You know, and chanting, never sleeping, and, you know, and just so much love for Krishna, and able to stay up all night and just talk about Krishna and nothing else. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Bo.